we're seeing cancer both late onset and early onset. I want to first stick with just colorectal cancer, because that is kind of that's my specialty. We know that there are certain risk factors for late onset colorectal cancer, which are people over the age of 50, which is where we routinely recommend that patients at the age of 45 with no major risk factors get screening colonoscopies, just to make sure that there's no polyps and to make sure that there's no cancers, because now we are seeing an increased incidence in younger cancers, younger patients with colorectal cancers who do not routinely need to have that screening colonoscopy at earlier ages than 45. And so, short answer is we're seeing it both at both ends. The reasonings are the interesting things. And so we know that in our Commonwealth, Tom Tucker has, he's played a huge role in the reasonings why we've had an increased incidence of our screening colonoscopies. We went from 49th in the nation to 16th in the nation, with largely a lot of initiatives from Frankfurt, a lot of faith-based initiatives, to increase the number of patients in our Commonwealth that get screening colonoscopies at appropriate ages. Even with that increased incidence, we're still seeing worse mortality and worse incidence of colorectal cancer than the rest of the nation. And so that's where we kind of, as scientists, play a bigger role, is that epidemiologically, we're doing our job. We're getting patients screened at appropriate ages. We're getting the word out that, colorectal cancer doesn't always have symptoms, and so we need to adhere to national guidelines. But even with that adherence, why is it that we're seeing death in younger patients and death in older patients too? I guess that's a very complex question. That's kind of the going to be the million-dollar question, is that what we think in the science world is that epidemiologically we're doing it, but there's genetic factors that we're not taking into account, and there's environmental factors that we need to start accounting for as well. So the genetic factors, we live in the Commonwealth where there's a high incidence of mutations in our genetic profile that puts us at higher risk than the rest of the nation. It doesn't tell you the whole story, but it gives you that one hit of a two-hit hypothesis, meaning it usually takes two hits to get a cancer. One is some genetic abnormality, and the second is something in the environment or something that the patient does that puts them at the other end of the susceptibility for cancer. Not just colon cancer, but all types of cancers, like your friend who developed the blood cancer. Likely there was a two-hit hypothesis in his case too, not knowing the full details. This is where we kind of have to ask ourselves, what can we study in our environment, in our Commonwealth? What can we study in the makeup of our environment of the Commonwealth? We know that risk factors such as diabetes, obesity, smoking, we know lower socioeconomic status don't always amount. We know that lower socioeconomic status does play a role in how we used to get patients involved, but we're trying to kind of, what's the best words? We've done a great job at hitting that lower socioeconomic status and getting them screened at appropriate ages. And so now, what are the other factors that play a role? Okay. So both ends, late onset and early onset, are on the rise, especially in our Commonwealth.
Something you just said reminded me that I misspoke earlier. This 37-year-old young man, he had a rare germ cancer. And I know why I said blood cancer, because another good friend of mine who is longstanding public radio reporter, Karen Czar, is going through a blood cancer treatment right now at Markey. So that's the blood cancer, but then germ cancer is what Jeffrey had. So the mutations you mentioned, I think you mentioned that we see more of that. And if that's the case, why is that? Do we know that?
So we know there's a certain population called the Lynch syndrome population, where the founder gene was founded within the Eastern Kentucky population, meaning that gene that put all those patients susceptible for not only colorectal cancer, but lung cancer, kidney cancers, skin cancers, was founded within the Eastern Kentucky population. And then as that population kind of migrated out westward and even into the Ohio region, it took that founder gene mutation with it as well. It's propagated since that long time generation, but the majority of those patients still reside within that Eastern Kentucky population, which has been a huge population of interest of mine, because I grew up in a really small town in rural Nevada, and the patients from Eastern Kentucky really remind me of my upbringing, which is healthcare inequities, long distances to see specialists to care, largely rural population. And so it's been a hard time for us, even in Marquette, University of Kentucky, in getting our outreach to that population. But now we're studying that population more and more, and we're gaining more and more insights on what we can do to help improve their healthcare inequities, and more importantly, to decrease the risk of their cancer incidence and mortality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump around a little bit from spot to spot here, but is it in on the screening matter, since there has been this seeing it in younger people, do you see a time when the call for a colonoscopy will be, you know, I'm going to just reach out there and say, like, even at like 35 or something, to start at 35 for the general population?
Yeah, Stu. I think in our lifetime, we likely will see these recommendations for screening go even down further. The change to the age of 45 was just within the past 5 years, believe it or not. Before that, we were at 50, but with all of the increase in our early onset colorectal cancer, we've changed that recommendation of 45. We're going to continue evaluating the statistics, and as the statistics show in earlier and earlier incidence of colorectal cancer, that likely will change. But what we really want to hit home is that patients who have abnormal rectal bleeding, meaning where the stool has some blood within it, not just in the toilet bowl, which is different than hemorrhoidal bleeding, patients who have inflammatory bowel disease, and the big one, patients who have family histories of cancers or colorectal cancers, we really have to pay close attention to those three factors and recommend even earlier than 45 for those patients. So those patients, hopefully they're listening to this, and will reach out to their primary care provider to see whether or not they should be seen earlier for screening.
Mm-hmm. Just as I'll call this an editorial comment, that for those 35-year-olds, you might have to improve the prep to get them to do it in big numbers.
I think you have definitely hit. So improving the prep has been a huge thing, and there are preps out there that are very well tolerated. We don't, I'm going to speak for colorectal surgeons and gastroenterologists both alike, is that we don't want to make this experience miserable. We want all our patients to come back. We want to ensure that we eradicate these cancers or catch them early enough in their polyp stages that they never have to see people like surgeons like myself. That would be the ideal situations, where we can catch these things before they turn into cancers and get rid of them with the colonoscopy. That's why we stress the colonoscopy so much, is it because it can be both diagnostic in diagnosing colon cancer, and polyps, but it also can be therapeutic because polyps and early cancers can sometimes be treated with just the colonoscopy itself.
I appreciate your time. A few other questions. As far as still in the colorectal area, that's a funny way to say it, I guess. But as far as surgery, when is surgery most effective? I mean, I guess the lay people tend to think of, when you have a stage four cancer of any kind, is surgery still effective?
So there's a couple of promises we make as surgeons. Number one is to do what's safe for our patients. And number two is to help beat them of the cancer that they have so that they die of something well far beyond, decades after their diagnosis of cancer. Stage four colon cancer is not what it was 5 years ago. There's been advances in treatments just within the past 5 years. I operate quite a bit with our surgical oncologists who do a lot of the surgeries with the liver, the spread of cancer to the liver from the colon. And we have lots of technology to offer that can help improve the quantity of life for these patients and sometimes even treat them completely with surgery itself. And chemotherapy. The advances in chemotherapy recently with precision medicine, with a lot of the advances. I told you about the genetic profiling that we do. So the advances in that have allowed us to individualize medicine once again, to target some mutations, to target some areas of these cancers that can help eradicate cancers even in their late stages. But I will tell you this is that surgery is most effective when we can find it and it's contained to the colon or rectum itself, or contained to the site of the cancer where it was found originally.
One question about genetics and I guess environmental factors, or maybe this is more environmental, but I guess in some ways it's a personal story, but my daughter, who is she's 34 now, but in college I remember her telling me that she was a big hot dog fan, and she told me she ate hot dogs a lot, and then at about that same time I read somewhere about nitrates and how nitrates were cancer causing. So it's like, well, get off those hot dogs, but seriously, I mean, we do talk about diet, but something like that, how much is that? Should something like that be a concern about nitrates or any other food product when you talk about colorectal cancer?
Stu, I wish we were having this conversation in probably 2 to 3 years, because that's the hot topic research right now that I'm involved in. And it's looking into the gut microbiome, the changes that happen with our gut microbiome, with some of the things that we are exposed to, not just in our diet, but also within water, within, the processed foods that we eat, with the exercises that we do, it changes the makeup of what our guts are made of. And that does, I wouldn't necessarily say cause colorectal cancer, but it's definitely playing a bigger role in the development and the risk factors associated with colorectal cancer. And so why I say I wish we'd have this conversation in 2 or 3 years is because that's a big part of our marquee mission is to look into that gut microbiome, look into the environmental exposures, and look into the genetic predispositions that are putting our patients, our family members at risk for colon cancer who don't necessarily do any of the bad things. Your daughter likely, I wouldn't say give up hot dogs completely, but this is all in moderation. We want to make sure we enjoy our lives. I think one thing, if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's to be appreciative of the life that we have and to take care of the bodies that we have too. And so, you know, I think enjoy things in moderation, but also know what you're consuming. And you know, we got to all be cognizant of what we're exposed to.
Okay. One more, if that's all right. And I'll circle back to kind of the more generally in the first, I guess, point I made in terms of this story and the, you know, cancer generally, the number of cancer cases and where it is. Are you, I guess I'll ask this, are you optimistic that in the next 10 to 20 years, there won't be this continual growth in cancers generally? I guess it will always be a catch-up mode. I guess that's what I'm really asking. If someone like you and someone in the science, medical science, that could trying to catch up with cancer as it continues to grow.
I'm a scientist, but internal optimist. And I will tell you this is that I'm amazed at how far we've come just in my short career at treating cancer. I told you 5 years ago, stage four colon cancer, you know, we didn't have what we have now. And now I'm able to offer more and more surgery, more and more, you know, more and more precision medicine to improve outcomes for these patients. And I am hopeful that, you know, in the next 10, 20 years, yeah, we will be able to be more proactive rather than reactive. And we'll be able to figure out what it is that's exactly going on with these patients and putting us all at risk, putting us all at risk for cancer development.
Right.
We've got to eradicate cancer, and it's going to start with us. Hopefully the audience understands that we're all on board. We're 100% invested in everyone's health and well-being. We're trying to figure out epidemiologic, which is on a population-based level. We're trying to figure out individual characteristics, and then we're going into the molecular level too. So we're hitting it with everything that we have.